routine anyway. So we need to sort of keep in touch with our relatives, for sure. And we should also sort of be keeping in touch, in a sense, even with our friends and with our neighbours. So, and that starts just with the little things, such as just greeting, for example, our neighbours in the street. And technically, in Islam, we're advised that, you know, if we haven't heard from someone, I think it's like 3 days, or this is according to the Holy Prophet, then we should inquire after them, because, you know, obviously maybe they've fallen ill or something is wrong. And obviously in our modern society it's a bit different, because, you know, we can keep in touch with people also, in a sense, virtually. We can send messages and have video calls, and, you know, maybe this 3-day limit, I'm pretty sure that many people have sort of extended that to a bit more. But, you know, maybe we need to be a bit more proactive, you know, especially when we read about stories in some parts of the world, and we read this again and again, that people, not just old people, but people of varying ages, maybe something bad has happened to them, maybe they fell ill, maybe, you know, they just suddenly, something bad happened even in their home, they were living on their own, maybe they had a heart attack or something else collapsed, and then they basically, you know, they're like that, and no one even finds them for weeks. And, you know, so when we as Muslims hear something like that, we think, well, this is not good. So from that point of view, you know, we should really be checking in on the people we know, people who are a bit closer to us every so often, so that we can, in a sense, pick up on needs that some of our friends or even neighbours have. So we do not have situations like that happening in our Muslim societies, for sure. Welcome back to AIDS Ed here on Iron Wings Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And so I'm talking about this prerogative to visit family. And, you know, and I'm also talking about the prerogative to just care, be thinking about other people, be thinking about their needs, in a sense, predicting on their needs. And this is something that is said, especially the Ahlul Bayt want this, they expect this from us, Shia especially. So we're not meant to just sort of sit back and sort of wait. And then if someone comes to us with a request or needing help, that we try to meet their needs. And, you know, to be honest, you know, sometimes we do have people asking us for help and we don't do anything about it. I suspect that we are very quick to say, oh, no, I can't do that, or I don't want to do that. Or we say we'll do it and we just don't, or maybe we even forget. But, you know, this is going beyond that. So that's just the very basic level. But the level that we need to really reach as Muslims, and for sure as Shia, is that we need to be thinking actively, look what's going on in other people's lives. And, you know, this is something I think I've talked about before. So no, we cannot ignore our friends and not be in touch with them. We need to sort of check in on them actively every so often. But I also wanted to talk about just a little example from the life of one of the famous martyrs for Holy Defense by the name of Sayyid Jan Bozorgi. So he was very serious about visiting family. And this is a particular situation he'd arrived at in his life. So this was actually very close to his martyrdom, when he actually died because of the serious injuries he had sustained during the Holy Defense. So starting on Iranian New Year's Eve, he'd actually decided to visit all his relatives within the space of 1 week, because he knew that this was going to be the last chance to actually do that during this in that week of Iranian New Year's Eve, because he wasn't going to live to see another one. And, you know, and this is just a renewed emphasis for all of us. We do not have the guarantee that we're going to wake up tomorrow. So if there are things we need to be doing, being in touch with people, expressing to them our affection, our love, our closeness, then that is something we need to be doing maybe today, and not put things off, not procrastinate. and just remember the blessings that Allah has sent us with the friends and family we have today. So inshallah, this is just a reminder for all of us, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of AZ here on Iron Wings Radio, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
This is part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a televised address to the Iranian people on September 23, 2025. We run most of our power plants on gasoline and natural gas. This not only incurs high costs, but also pollutes the environment and the air. However, the electricity generated from enriched uranium and nuclear power plants produces zero pollution, costs significantly less, has a much longer operational life, and offers many other advantages that, as I mentioned, this is something that experts in the field should explain in more detail for the public. If we were to list the various uses of enriched uranium, it would make a long list. We didn't previously have this very important technology. We weren't capable of enrichment, and our enemies were unwilling to give it to us. No one else was willing to give it to us either. Over 30 years ago, a few determined managers and a few responsible, distinguished scientists, they were truly like this, started working on the issue of uranium enrichment and brought it to the point where it is today. Today, we are at an advanced level in terms of uranium enrichment. Of course, countries seeking to build nuclear weapons even increase enrichment up to 90% purity. Since we have no need for such weapons and we have no intention of building them, We haven't increased enrichment to that level. We have increased enrichment to 60%, which is a very high, excellent figure. And this is something that is necessary for some of the work that needs to be done in our country. We've been able to advance enrichment to this point, and we are now one of 10 countries in the world with this capability. I can tell you that out of the over 200 countries in the world, only 10 are capable of enrichment, and the Islamic Republic of Iran is one of them. The other 9 countries have nuclear bombs too, of course. We're the only one that doesn't have a nuclear bomb, and we won't have one. We have no intention of using nuclear weapons, but we do have enrichment. We are considered to be one of the 10 countries in this advanced industry. The scientists I mentioned laid the foundation for this work and made significant progress. But their most important contribution was training numerous individuals in this field. Today, according to a solid, reliable report given to us by those involved in this field, there are tens of distinguished scientists and professors, hundreds of students, and thousands of people who've been trained in the nuclear sciences, working in various nuclear-related fields.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done.
Good morning to all listeners of Iran Radio. Nice to have you with us. I'm your host here in Tehran for the next hour. And here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholars such as Abu Ali Sina or Ibn Sina, 1980 to 1037, known in the West as Avicenna, made very significant and substantial advances and discoveries in medicine. When Christians came into contact with the Muslim world during the Crusades, they brought back Muslim scholarship, which in turn helped spark the European Renaissance. Islamic astronomy became highly advanced during the Middle Ages. Astronomy was important to Muslims because it could be used to figure out the direction of Mecca so that people knew which way to face during prayers. This is one example of how the Western world is still influenced by Muslim innovations. Thank you for listening. You are listening to Iran Radio, and now the continuation of the programs. We start off this hour's programs with Radio Productions feature. Then it's time for our Radio Productions feature once again. And we finish off this hour's programs with Ulema's speech.
Sistan and Balochistan is populated by over 9,000 villages. The village of Ghalanor dates back to the Qajar period, and since this area isn't prone to earthquakes, the adobe houses have managed to survive for about 150 years. Isn't that amazing?
About 40 kilometers from the city of Zabul, this village was originally built on top of a hill and witnessed the migration of the villages of Old Fort. In fact, that's where it gets its name, Ghalanor, which means new fort. Ghalanor was built on high ground to protect its occupants from flood, since the varying amount of the flowing water of the Hamul River has always caused different problems for the people living in the Sistan Basin. But that's not the only thing the architects of this village had up their sleeves. During the Qajar period in the 18th and 19th centuries, different regions were managed by overlords or khans. The most eye-catching structure here is the two-story adobe castle of the Khan of the region. It was built at the entrance of the village and around a small hill, so the top of the hill is the floor of the second story. The village is currently being restored and is going to be turned into an eco-tourism village. Kilometers from Ghalanor lies a mysterious and ancient city referred to over the past 200 to 300 years as Dahane Ghulaman, or Gateway of the Slaves. Dahane Ghulaman is the largest Achaemenian site in the entire eastern section of Iran that has been dated back to between the 4th and the 6th century BC. More importantly, it's the only Achaemenid site that may hold within its depths the secrets of the lifestyle of the ordinary people living at that time. Built in the wilderness, away from the imperial capital, even with the alignment of buildings roughly in a straight line, running southwest to northeast along the edge of water supplies, the site was only inhabited for a brief period of a century or a century and a half, and was abandoned as a result of natural forces that have always determined the survival and migration of urban settlements in the arid region of Sistan.
The entire site was covered by sand. After it was dug up about 50 years ago in the 1960s, the layout of this ancient city was studied extensively by archaeologists from around the world. And it seems that they all came to a similar conclusion. The precise architecture and great harmony in the design of Dahane Ghulaman suggests that it was built with urban planning in mind about 2,500 years ago.
Geometric studies on this site have revealed 27 major structures, and an additional 23 buildings, most of which have not yet been unearthed. It was believed that the Achaemenids used architectural plans only in the construction of palaces and important buildings, such as the royal residences of Pasargadae, Persepolis, Susa, as well as Dasht-e Gohar. But it seems that the people of Dahani, Ghulaman, even prepared an architectural plan for the construction of their alleys and ordinary houses. The urban planning, the architecture, the temple, the location and size of what remains of this ancient city have led scholars to believe that it was a satrapal capital or something very similar to it in character. Studies into the origins of the hearths, fireplaces and altars have tried to reveal their purpose since they have a unique architecture. Were they used for animal sacrifices since animal blood was found on the altars? What kind of rituals were performed here? All these studies have tried to find answers to the many questions that arose 40 years ago with the unearthing of the site and have never been completely answered, even to this day. Standing atop the nearby hill that gives you an overview of the site, you can see lakes filled with a considerable amount of water around it.
The Chaimima reservoirs in the south of Zabul are three big lakes that are the second most important water storage reservoirs in the region. The water stored in these big lakes is used to irrigate the Sistan Plain and to provide drinking water for the cities of Zabul and Zahedan.
Trees were planted all around the lakes by the University of Zabul to prevent dust from falling into the water. This is Golnar Farnoudi for Iran.
Behind this beautiful old wooden door lies an ancient civilization, a wealth of cultural, artistic, and religious jewels that portray the civilization of a nation.
The Qom Astana Museum, located in the city of Qom, right near the holy shrine of Fatima Masuma, sister of Imam Riza, opened up its doors to the public back in 1935. The museum has an area of 1,000 square meters with two floors hosting two exhibition halls. More than 1,000 artifacts and objects of artistic, cultural and historical value are displayed here. These treasures belong to different periods in history, from the 1st and 2nd millennium BC to the Islamic era in the country. The museum displays a wide range of objects and artifacts, varying from paintings, chinaware, ceramics and pottery to priceless handmade rugs, glassware and precious Qurans.
Museum near to the shrine of Fatima Masura. It's wonderful to look around this museum, particularly to look at the carpet, beautiful carpet, and with the silk, beautifully designed. And also, I look around some other places to look at the Quran, the oldest Quran from the 9th century to the present time. It's amazing to keep those kind of like traditional symbolic teachings of Prophet Muhammad.
The
The crown jewel of Iran's handicraft industry is its beautiful handmade rugs and carpets. Excavations in Iran have revealed that this art dates back to the 1st and 2nd millennium BC. The treasured silk rugs in this museum are valuable for their extraordinary designs, rich combination of colors, and excellent texture. One of the main features of Islamic architecture is the gorgeous glazed tiles that decorate the interior and exterior of the buildings. This art form reached new heights during the 14th century when the Timurid Empire ruled the country. The oldest tiles in this museum belong to the Seljuk era, some 12 centuries ago. Where do you think beautiful doors opened up to? There must have been a beautiful heaven behind these doors that inspired the artists to create wonders on these beautiful creations. The decorated doors displayed here date back to different time periods, but all adorned beautifully with different artistic techniques. Some are decorated with the art of marquetry, wood inlaying and wood carving with delicate pieces of ivory, bone, brass, gold and silver sections. Others are made with metal, embellished with inscriptions written by the best calligraphers of the time. Size isn't really an issue when it comes to narrating history. Some items here in this museum are quite small in size, but great and precise narrators that reveal historical facts. Museums are the spiritual and cultural treasures of a nation that clearly display the wisdom, intelligence, and artistic abilities of the past generations. These jewels are ever eternal. Hoda Lezgi for Iran.
IRIB English Radio.
That was the week that was.
Beyond the headlines, we dissect the stories that shaped the past 7 days, from the heart of region to the global stage. name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to our political chat show, That Was the Week, That Was. We look at global politics and issues of the day, and I'm your host, Leila Garcia. With me here in the studio is veteran journalist and political commentator, Meron de Akhshand. Please stay tuned. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much indeed.
Today's discussion is about Donald Trump's suggestion that talks with the Venezuelan counterpart Nicolas Maduro could be on the table as the U.S. Navy's most advanced aircraft carrier arrives in the Caribbean Sea. The U.S. president spoke after Washington further upped the ante by announcing plans to designate as a terrorist group a cartel that it claims Nicolas Maduro runs. We may be having some discussions with Maduro, and we'll see how that turns out, Trump told reporters in Florida, adding they would like to talk. Pressed for more details, he replied, Venezuela would like to talk. What does it mean? You tell me. I don't know. I'll talk to anybody. Earlier Sunday, the U.S. State Department said it would classify Cartel de los Soles, which it claims is headed by Maduro, as a foreign terrorist organization, FTO. Cartel de los Soles, with other designated FDOs, including Trinidad-Aragua and the Sinaloa Cartel, are responsible for terrorist violence throughout our hemisphere as well as for trafficking drugs into the United States and Europe, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said in a statement. The designation, effective from November 24, follows a huge U.S. military mobilization in the Caribbean, which Washington states necessary to prevent drug smuggling into the United States. But Caracas claims it is really a ploy to overthrow its leftist President Maduro, who the United States considers an illegitimate leader and a drug lord, a charge that Maduro denies. Okay, let's bring in veteran journalist and political commentator Meron de Akhshand.
Thanks for inviting me.
My first question is, the United States has issued a new air travel warning for Venezuela. Tell us more about that.
Yes, that's right. The U.S. has issued a new air travel warning. Yeah. The Federal Aviation Authority, the FAA, sent out a notice to air missions, or NOTAM, alerting pilots, airlines, and air traffic controllers of a potentially hazardous situation in and around Venezuela. The alert speaks of a worsening security situation and heightened military activity in and around Venezuela. According to the Federal Aviation Authority, notice said that threats could pose a potential risk to aircraft at all altitudes, including during overflight, the arrival and departure phases of flight, and or airports and aircraft underground.
Right.
The warning is for the Maiquetia Flight Information Region, which includes Venezuelan airspace, as well as parts of southern Caribbean, such as Colombia, Guyana, Brazil, and Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm-hmm. Will talks between Trump and Maduro diffuse the increasingly tense situation in the region?
Well, that's a good question. Donald Trump has hinted he might be prepared to negotiate with Nicolas Maduro and his representatives. He said, we may be having some conversations with Maduro and we'll see how that turns out. Mm-hmm. They would like to talk, he said. Asked if he would rule out U.S. troops on the ground in Venezuela, Trump said, no, I don't rule that out. And Trump stepped up his rhetoric towards Mexico as well, which he accused of failing to tackle drug trafficking problem and drug trafficking groups. When asked whether he would sanction U.S. counter-drug operation in Mexico, Donald Trump said, would I launch strikes in Mexico to stop drugs? It's okay with me, whatever we have to do to stop drugs. Mm-hmm. So he said that he is prepared to launch such operations in Mexico. Talks between Donald Trump and Nicolas Maduro will certainly diffuse tensions in the region if they happen. But Trump has been sending mixed signals with regards to Venezuela all along. A top U.S. aircraft carrier, USS Gerald Ford, has arrived in the Caribbean Sea, bringing the total number of U.S. service members on the ground in the region to about 15,000. So with a huge aircraft carrier like that, with those numbers of potential troops on the ground, 15,000 troops in the region, you have to wonder whether Trump is thinking about war or he claims he likes to talk to Maduro as well. You have to wonder about that. He's been sending mixed signals.
Mm-hmm. The United States conducted another attack on an alleged drug trafficking boat in the Eastern Pacific on Saturday. How many attacks on alleged drug boats have been conducted by U.S. military since early September? And how many people have died in these attacks?
Well, these numbers keep rising, of course, but U.S. has declared that its military has killed at least 82 people in 21 attacks since September on
right.
vessels it accuses of being engaged in narco trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
These figures are accurate as of Monday, 17th of November, so 82 people killed 21 attacks on boats and various vessels
wow.
in both the Caribbean Sea
mm-hmm.
and Eastern Pacific. So as of Monday, 17th of November, we have 82 people killed and 21 attacks on boats in both the Caribbean Sea and the Eastern Pacific.
I see, yeah.
Donald Trump has designated drug cartels as terrorists, and his administration has said it is engaged in a non-international armed conflict with drug traffickers.
Mm-hmm.
However, many experts question whether the campaign is legal because drug traffickers are not attacking the U.S. military or threatening the United States with imminent attack. Evidence to tie these bombed vessels and boats to the drug trade has been very limited, and militaries are supposed to distinguish between civilian and military
right.
targets.
Yeah. How do you see the role of U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio in all of this?
Well, the U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio is the real hardliner within the administration when it comes to Venezuela. He's the real hardliner,
yeah, right.
in fact. Marco Rubio is a longtime critic of Nicolas Maduro's socialist government,
mm-hmm.
and he's managed to win the support of Stephen Miller, the powerful White House Deputy Chief of Staff, and he's also won the support of Susie Wiles, the Chief of Staff in the White House.
Yeah.
And Marco Rubio did this partly by seizing on the administration's designation of Tren de Aragua, a transnational gang of Venezuelan origin, as a foreign terrorist organization that has infiltrated the United States and allegedly fueled the influx of undocumented migrants fleeing Venezuela. And underlying Marco Rubio's drive may be a mixture of both ideology and political ambition.
Right,
so
yeah.
experts say that Rubio's hard line with regards to Venezuela is both a mixture of ideology and political ambition.
Yeah.
Marco Rubio is a son of Cuban immigrants. He has long denounced Nicolas Maduro and his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, for the financial and oil support that they provided to Cuba's government.
Mm-hmm.
And observers say Marco Rubio is eyeing the Republican presidential nomination in 2028 when Donald Trump is constitutionally barred from seeking a third term in office. And Rubio is adopting a hard line on Venezuela. This could help secure the Cuban ethnic vote, which is very crucial
right.
in Florida
mm-hmm.
and in other U.S. states as well, but particularly in Florida.
Florida, yeah. Britain has quietly suspended intelligence cooperation with the U.S. and the Caribbean Sea because London does not consider the deadly U.S. military campaign against ships accused of drug trafficking to be in the line with international law. Tell us more about that.
Yes, Britain has suspended the sharing of intelligence with the United States on suspected drug trafficking vessels in
mm-hmm.
the Caribbean Sea. But British officials have been at pains to point out that Britain does not comment on intelligence matters, so they're not officially confirming this. But both The Guardian in Britain and CNN in
mm-hmm.
the United States,
yeah.
both of them reported that Britain has suspended the sharing of intelligence with the United States
right.
on these alleged drug trafficking vessels in the Caribbean Sea because of concerns in Britain that these are extrajudicial killings. These attacks on boats, on alleged drug trafficking boats resulting in casualties and resulting in dead bodies. Britain is concerned that these are extrajudicial killings by the U.S.
Right.
Army. And this decision by Britain is a rare rupture between London and Washington. It indicates that Britain does not believe the Trump administration's practice of sinking boats allegedly used for drug trafficking is legal.
Yeah.
The United Kingdom, which retains oversight on several island territories in the Caribbean Sea, has long shared intelligence with the United States
mm-hmm.
about movement of suspect vessels traveling from Latin America. And a British government spokesperson said it is our long-standing policy to not comment on intelligence matters.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, both The Guardian newspaper in Britain and CNN in the United States have reported that Britain has stopped sharing intelligence with the United States on suspected drug trafficking vessels in the Caribbean Sea.
Yeah. You are listening to the Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran, English Radio. This program entitled, That Was the Week That Was. CBS News on Wednesday reported that senior military officials had presented Trump with updated options for potential operations in Venezuela, including strikes on land. Venezuela announced Tuesday what it called a major nationwide military deployment to counter the growing U.S. naval presence off its coast. How likely is a war between the U.S. and Venezuela?
Well, as you mentioned, CBS News has confirmed that senior military officials have presented Donald Trump with options for potential operations on the ground in Venezuela. President Trump was presented with updated options for potential operations in Venezuela, and this was confirmed by CBS News. Various senior officials were involved in this briefing of President Trump, including the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, Air Force General Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and various other senior officials were present in this news briefing.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently no final decision was reached,
right,
according to CBS News. The Trump administration has been sending mixed signals on Venezuela, but a war between U.S. and Venezuela actually looks highly likely because
right,
of the huge
true.
And unprecedented buildup of U.S. military forces mm-hmm. in the Caribbean Sea in and around Venezuela. A top U.S. aircraft carrier, USS Gerald Ford, has arrived in the Caribbean Sea, bringing the total number of U.S. servicemen in the region to about 15,000. This
wow.
is totally That's unprecedented, a huge
mm-hmm.
a huge show of force by the U.S. military. You have to wonder, but what are all these service members doing in the region? If it's
right.
not going to
yeah.
be an attack on Venezuela,
mm-hmm.
what are they there for? And so it actually looks quite likely that there might be some sort of an operation on land in
mm-hmm.
Venezuela, and we can say that Donald Trump has been sending mixed signals with regards to his intentions on Venezuela. He's blowing hot and cold on Venezuela, but it does look
yeah.
very likely that we might see some sort of military action in and around Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. To sum up very briefly then, talks between Donald Trump and Nicolas Maduro might lead to diffusion of tensions in the region if these talks actually take place. But given the huge U.S. military buildup in the Caribbean Sea, war between U.S. and Venezuela is also highly likely. Thank you, Mr. Rakshan, for your insightful analysis.
Thank you very much.
For more on these and other critical issues, be sure to visit our website at parstoday.ir/yan. And that brings us to the end of today's program. Join us again next time for another edition of That Was the Week That Was. Take care and goodbye.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked as
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
Surah Al-Qadr was also revealed in Mecca, like the other Meccan surahs. It is short and rhythmic. There are also narrations concerning Surah Al-Qadr itself, stating that if someone recites Surah Al-Qadr 7 times over the graves of the believers, God will grant forgiveness to both the deceased and the person who recited the chapter. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. In His name, for existence is from Him. He is the source of all types of mercy. In His name means seeking help from all His attributes. Seeking help from Allah, which signifies all God's attributes, not just As-Samad, the eternal refuge, or Al-Qadir, all-powerful, or Al-Hay, the ever-living, or Al-Ghayyum, the self-subsisting. Allah encompasses all, like the word liquid, which include all liquids. It does not say Bism As-Samad or Bism Al-Qayyum, but rather Bismillah. This is the same that comprises all of God's attributes. I seek help from all His attributes. He is the source of all mercy. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.